Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 24 of the Raw Rundown. My name is Kenny McIntosh. I'm joined here by David J. McCutcheon, and I'm recording to you from a street in Liverpool because I'm that committed to podcasting. Hi, David.
Hey, how's it going, Kenny? Let me go ahead and say, by the way, I loved Liverpool. Just what an excellent city. If you live in Liverpool, if you are a Liverpudlian, even, I want to say I love you guys. You're all wonderful. Just a wonderful, gracious city. So much to do. So many different places to get drunk. I loved it. I thought it was a wonderful city. You could say that Liverpool, Kenny, is the opposite of Pittsburgh.
Well, do you know what I want to say also to the people of Liverpool? If I was in central Liverpool, I might have more good things to say. But I'm currently standing outside in a retail park outside the Travelodge Liverpool Stonedale Park. And they can suck my dick because they are the worst Travelodge I have ever seen. There is no bar. There is no area to sit and chill out. There is just a very small reception box that looks a bit like a prison cell and rooms. So, but you know.
I love a good prison cell, though. That usually follows after a good night of drinking in Liverpool.
This is true. But so basically, this week's Raw Rundown is going to be a little bit shorter. Because it's very cold, and I can only stand out here for so long. Now, you might hear background noise from me, but I just don't care enough to stand still. So if you hear background noise, I apologize, but we thought we'd be better to give you a show than without.
Here's the thing. This is authentic, Kenny. This is from the streets, okay?
It's literally from the streets. I'm standing under a bush. And not anyway. We'll not go there.
Who's Bush? I need to know.
It only took us 4 minutes to turn it sexual. You can also get us on Patreon, patreon.com/insidetheropes. David and I just did a WrestleMania 9 review, which was one of my favorite podcasts of recent memory. I think we really did a good job with nailing that for people like Martin McKee who've seen it before, and people like Mel who turned off halfway through and doesn't respect good wrestling. But yeah. I'm kidding, Mel. So we've got plenty of stuff up there. There's options for $1, $3, $5, and much, much more.
And we're always recording, too, you guys. We're always recording new content. We're always digging into the ITR vaults and presenting old content that feels fresh, feels new. I'm listening to the old vault stuff, and it's just as funny. God, I love you and Robert together. We need to get Robert in on this.
It's funny you mention that because I can confirm I've had a conversation and Robert Duffin has agreed to return to the airways of Inside the Ropes. Now, he has expressed to me, he has a part-timer now. You know, he is essentially our Brock Lesnar.
Yes.
Therefore, he can only be lulled out of his cocoon of non-wrestling for when it's really special. So when Christopher Martin... Is it Christopher Martin? No, Christopher Martin wanted Royal Rumble 2000. He would have come out for you, but you didn't ask for him. Somebody who I've forgotten because I always forget. There's like five names, and I remember all the names, but can never remember who's asked for what. But somebody had asked for Robert and I to cover SummerSlam 2002. I think it was Christopher Martin. Actually, I think he wanted another podcast as well. Anyway, if it's not Christopher Martin, I'm just giving him mad love. But... Anyway, long story short, Robert has agreed to return for Patreon to cover SummerSlam 2002. Big return of Shawn Michaels, the grudge match with The Rock and Brock Lesnar, and much, much more. So we'll be covering that later this month.
I can't wait for that, just because of the fact that I love me some Robert Duffin. You guys, if you are a newer listener to Inside the Ropes, I'm a pile of shit. Right? Like, I'm just subbing for Robert here. I'm just waiting for him to come and take the throne back, because I love him that much. He's way funnier than me, way more charismatic, so much wittier, more intelligent, more just a beautiful man. His heart isn't malfunctioning like mine is. He is just the total package, and I don't mean Lex Luger. I cannot wait for Robert Duffin to make his triumphant return to Inside the Ropes.
And if you're a young listener of Inside the Ropes, right, because I like to think that we have all ages listeners here, and you're sort of maybe a teenager, and you've not mastered the art of sucking dick yet, David McCutcheon has just showed you how to do that to Robert Duffin. So, Laren.
Kenny, I was talking with Paige at Redhead Wrestling on Twitter, right? We were talking earlier, and we were talking about older ladies that tickle our loins. Right?
I'm outside in the cold. Why are you doing this? Right, older ladies with Paige.
I mentioned Helen Mirren, just absolute bombshell, right? You know, like, babe. Helen Mirren, you give me a romp with Helen Mirren, woo, come on, granny, let's go. And I figured out exactly who would be your old lady Fandango.
For fuck's sake.
I think the poofy hair of a Linda McMahon would be right up your alley.
Oh, mate, I would... What I do to Linda McMahon.
Yeah, and you know what's great, too, is no matter
how... I mean, essentially, all I'd want to do is, like, go out and get us a couple of quarter pounders with cheese, get into bed, just cuddle, and put on the WrestleMania instrumental theme. That's pretty much how it would go.
Oh, no. With that poofy hair, heads could hit the headboard and cause no concussions, Kenny.
I want to cause no damage to Linda McMahon whatsoever. I don't want to cause any damage. Anyway, I also want to say, because sometimes we bring up real-life events on Inside the Ropes, and, you know, everybody's gone through a tough 2016. Well, not everybody. Some people have. Some people latch onto the fucking celebrity death bandwagon. But, you know, people, you know, David had heart surgery, which he never talks about. Never. I have friends who have family members that are terminal. Saunders had some deaths in her family. Lots of bad stuff has happened. So my mum and I decided that we were going to go to the cinema yesterday because, you know, we hadn't hung out in a little while. We're like, go see a movie. And we decided to go and see a film called Collateral Beauty with Will Smith.
Mm.
And I feel like I've had heart surgery after watching it. It is the most harrowing film I've ever seen. Do not go and see it. It is a film about parents losing their children. It is awful. Like, it is, like, the saddest thing in the world. So don't go and see it, please. That's my message to you.
That's more or less how I felt coming out of Rogue One. So, yeah, it's just like a time of year for really sad films, I guess.
Yeah. But Sonny's still going. Anyway, so we'll talk about Raw that happened this week from Tampa, Florida.
I do think, though, Kenny, we should touch on something that just came out yesterday from Deadspin. Apparently, Jimmy Snuka's murder trial has been dismissed.
Yeah, this is interesting. What do you think about that?
He's very obviously guilty, right? But the reason that they dismissed it is that they managed to sell the judge on the fact that he has dementia. And apparently it was a hard sell because she bought it. I don't know. Here's my thing is I don't understand. Okay, so he can't take the trial. He can't take the stand at the trial because he has dementia, right?
Mm-hmm.
But why should that automatically throw the entire case in the dumpster? I don't understand why his testimony alone is what that hinged on.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. A couple of years ago when all this stuff started coming out about the Snuka trial, and for anybody who doesn't know, the story is, in 1983, Jimmy Snuka had a girlfriend called Nancy, I think it's Argentino,
or it is.
Something like that, that was her surname, and they were, you know, they were a couple, and she basically was found dead in a hotel room, and, you know, he maintains that this was her, she'd overdosed, or something like that. But, you know, the autopsy showed that she'd actually been struck to the head a fair few times. He's changed the story a couple of times. He'd said that she'd hit her head on the sidewalk when she got out of the car to be sick or something. But, like, that doesn't match up with the injury she has. There's a lot of evidence, and if you're interested in the subject, there's a guy called Irv Mushnick who has written a lot extensively about the topic. It's very interesting if you fancy reading more about it. But, you know, it's very obvious that he is, at the very least, probable to have done this crime. And he got away with it for the most part. Now, I'm not saying he did do it, because I don't know, but, like, the evidence is hard to kind of dispute. The thing for me is, like, I'm kind of with you. Like, I think it's bullshit that, like, his dementia sort of gives him a free pass.
Right, yeah.
I mean, the other thing is, because I know that Dave Meltzer had said... about 6 months ago that he'd actually spoken to someone who spoke to Jimmy Snuka and said he was absolutely fine.
Yeah, he was able to remember stuff. Going around doing autograph signings and all types of stuff. And it's like, okay, well, you can go and meet the fans and sign some pictures and everything, but you can't take the stand at a trial where you're up because you murdered someone, potentially?
Yeah, it's really tough. I think that the thing for me is, like, you know, I totally get in an era of wrestling where, you know, we want to keep legends as legends and stuff. I'm quite good at being able to separate a character from a person. You know, like, I'm able to do that for the most part. But I think that, you know, the problem for me is, like, you've got the family of this girl who was killed, you know, it's very probable she was killed, and that family's never going to get the justice. And
never.
The guy who it feels like probably did it has gotten away with it and is never going to be held accountable. What I find interesting is that Jimmy Snuka potentially murdered someone and he's still in the Hall of Fame, but Hulk Hogan got removed for a tape. You know, like, you need to pick your fucking battles if you ask me. Like, and, you know, maybe I'm biased, but, I think that, again, I think there's a lot of kind of, there's a pitchfork mentality with a lot of media these days. You know, we love to tear people down for stuff that they do. But I think that we need to, in some aspects, you know, people need to be given a chance to move on and learn from mistakes. But the thing with Jimmy Snuka is it doesn't fall under that category. You know, it's a crime that he is accused of, and he's never been able to really clear his name on it due to evidence. So it's tough. It's tough for me to. I think for me, the legacy of Jimmy Snuka has been tarnished by all the stuff that I've read about it.
And the more you read about it, the more concrete it sounds that this actually happened and that he actually had some say in it. They consistently found her with bruises and scratches and black eyes and everything throughout the duration of their relationship. It was very obvious that he was physically abusive towards this woman.
And you know what's interesting as well is that it's very, I mean, this is just, you know, me kind of putting stuff together, but if you look at the history of WWF, this happened in the mid-1983 when Vince McMahon was trying to take WWF national, and it fits in with the time frame that, like, Vince McMahon, you know, there's a story, again, in all the research, that Vince McMahon came to the police station with a briefcase and left without it.
Snuka himself mention this in his book?
Yeah, he mentions it in his book, and that's why the case was reopened. You know, Jimmy Snuka actually is the one that kind of made this come back to light. But the idea is that if something did happen, Vince McMahon may know about it. You know, he potentially could know about it. But even if he, you know, even if he did or he didn't, you know, it's not Vince McMahon's fault. He didn't do anything to this woman. But I think that it's very likely that he's probably went, do you know what? I can't take my company national and international with an accused murderer, you know?
Right,
so
right.
The time frame fits that he then goes and finds Hogan, and Snuka is slowly phased out and is never quite the star that he was before, which is interesting, you know?
Very.
But yeah, so that's kind of... that's it. Let us know your take. I'm interested if anybody has read up about it. I'll try and post some stuff on the Inside the Ropes Twitter about, like, some links to read some stuff on it, because I think it's quite interesting if people are interested in reading about it.
It is an absolutely fascinating story for people who are wrestling fans or just fans of real-life cold cases, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So there's that. But we are, at the end of this podcast, going to talk about the Bring It to the Table podcast that followed Raw. But first of all, let's get into Raw.
Let's get through Raw.
Let's get through it. So as I say, I don't have all my notes in front of me, and I don't have, you know, we're not going to go through it segment by segment, but let's just kind of hit the big points. Opening segment, we had Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens confronting Mick Foley. Mick Foley's one of your favorites. What did you think of the new look?
The new look, man, he needs to do something with that. There's an old saying that, I'm not sure where it originated, but Kevin Nash always says it. I like Kevin Nash a lot as a person. I like how intelligent he is, so I'm going to give him the credit on it, all right? And it is,
okay.
You can't be half pregnant, right? you're either not pregnant or you are pregnant. And Mick, your damn look right now is half pregnant. right? You got a haircut, but it's all still there. What's going on here? I thought Linda McMahon was out there and she dyed her wig.
Well, this looks like a home haircut, to be fair. This did not look like a... Yeah. You know, he didn't go to a salon and get this done.
If I went to fucking Great Clips and paid $10, I think I'd want a refund.
Now, tell me this. Knowing me as well as you know me, yes. What is the one thing that annoyed me the most about the look that he had on Monday?
God, I don't even know. Was it the pants?
Nope.
What is it?
The thing that annoyed me the most is he came out on Monday Night Raw in December of 2016 with the old logoed Monday Night Raw t-shirt.
Are those back in style, though? Is that something that the WWE shop is peddling?
No, it's not. There is actually a new version of it, yet he still had the old version. Baffling. Absolutely baffling.
Outdated branding, Mick. Come on now.
Bloody Mick Foley. So obviously Mick was out there, you know, talking to Owens and Jericho, and then Stephanie would come out when there was a hint at an abuse of power, and it all culminated in Stephanie Mick Foley made the Kevin Owens show an actual chat show with Goldberg as the guest, and then Stephanie made a match between Roman Reigns and Chris Jericho, and then a match between Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens to determine who's banned from ringside. Now, Mick Foley did flub a line here quite badly.
Yeah.
He was meaning to say, you know, if you lose the match, then you're banned from the US title match, Chris Jericho, even though Chris Jericho was in the US title match. He was banned from having the match that he was in. And Stephanie pretty much loses her shit about it. And I'm just kind of curious, because you're such a big Mick Foley fan. You know, as am I, and as a lot of us. How do you feel about the fact that, you know, this is the second time now in a couple of weeks, he's flubbed something pretty badly, and, you know, how do you feel about it? Like, in terms of him as a weekly television character, is this something we need to be concerned about? Is it maybe something that is he not feeling it anymore? What's your kind of perception of Mick and his kind of recent performance in the job?
A few things. First and foremost, just going back to the Jericho thing, the sell of Jericho, Lock It In, man, just the absolute best, right? Just so brilliant. Just what a wonderful era that we grew up in, where we were blessed to watch the evolution of Chris Jericho. Just one of the all-time greatest wrestling performers. Kudos to Jericho. Love him to death. Secondly, I don't think the flubs are a bad deal. If this were 10 years ago, we wouldn't even think anything of it, right? This were 15 years ago, or, Lord, 20 years ago, now that it would be 1997 as being 20 years ago, we would think absolutely nothing of it, and it would just roll with the punches. But I think we're becoming indoctrinated by the WWE style, so we're constantly caught up in... Oh, are they hitting their marks? Like, what are we, Kevin fucking Dunn? Why do we care? You know what
I think it's just
micromanagement to a point, and we need to kind of calm down and sit back and relax a little bit.
Mick Foley did make a joke about the line from last week. You know, he had Tampa written in his hand and mentioned Jacksonville, and yes. You know that. I think for me personally, if it happens a couple more times, I think there is cause for concern. You know, like, once or twice is cool, but, like, you know, I think you just we need somebody in these roles, like, that's constantly on the game, you know.
And now, would you prefer someone like Mick Foley, who will give you some amazing performances like he does with his promos with Sami Zayn, or would you prefer someone like a John Laurinaitis, who is completely monotone and brings absolutely nothing to the table? How would you feel about it?
Well, I mean, obviously, I'd much prefer Mick Foley. I think the problem for me is that I hold Mick Foley in such a high regard, right, as a performer, that I don't ever want to have that lessened. And it's not lessened right now. Like, I'm not saying it is, but I just think that, like, it's like, you know, as much as I would love to sit here and say that it wasn't a bit you know, a bit of the fact that Hulk Hogan called it the fucking Super, the Silverdome at WrestleMania 30, you know, twice. Yeah. It was kind of like, oh, for fuck's sake, Hulk, you know? So I feel like, I think part of it is that Mick Foley is, you know, with the whole thing last week about his hip surgery, or the fact that he's got, you know, he needs to get his knees replaced or whatever it is, and he's not got the health insurance. Like, I don't know if he's 100% into the role, you know, in terms of, I think, you know, obviously the Sami Zayn stuff was very clearly something he could sink his teeth into, but I just don't know if Mick Foley likes the idea of being the subservient to Stephanie, where, you know, he comes out and just has to go back and forth all the time in a kind of generic manner. You know, I don't know if
it kind of shackles him a bit as a performer.
Yeah, it does
shackle.
I mean, he did an interview recently where he said that, you know, he knows how this is going to end, that he knows that, you know, Stephanie will defeat him in the character stakes and then he'll be gone.
Right.
You know, which, I mean, you know, he's smart and he knows that's how it's going to end, but to hear him say it, you don't usually hear people saying they know how it's going to end while they're still there.
Right.
Which is interesting.
Begs the question of how bad is WWE creative that a man who is not on the creative force, but a creative gentleman in his own right, can see the light at the end of the tunnel and know exactly where the destination is.
Yeah, no, that is true. I think the other problem is that it is difficult. I'm trying to give WWE a little bit of leeway here. It is difficult to book two authority figures on every show. You know, every week.
Very, very. It's incredibly stupid. I don't understand why Stephanie just didn't make herself the general manager if that's what she was going to do. The thing I like about SmackDown is that Shane doesn't appear every week, right? Like,
no.
He shows up every once in a while, and it genuinely feels like it is Daniel Bryan's show to run.
Yeah, 100%, and I think that makes
it work. As to where it's the other way around with Raw. We don't know whose show it is, because they're mingling. Why didn't Stephanie just take the role herself, if that's the way it was going to be?
Indeed, I would agree. Although, you know, let's jump about a little bit here. I think something that I did enjoy in the show was, you know, we had Stephanie kind of talking down to Bayley and having this kind of, you know, I don't really think you're the face of the women's division like Mick Foley. He's the one that wanted you, I didn't. And then she's sort of like, you know, trying to prove her wrong and stuff. Like, I do like that. I mean, I said it months ago. That's the feud I'd love to see.
Could you say that she is a B-plus player?
But you know what? I'm fine to do a variation of that because I love that storyline. Here's something that I don't think I'm going to be very popular for saying. I don't think Bayley was very good in this promo.
Yeah,
I feel like Bayley needs a little work on sort of conveying how much things mean to her.
Yeah,
because
I completely agree. Yeah,
and I think because Stephanie. You know, Stephanie is so great at being a cunt. You know what I mean? Like, she just, she can do it so well that, like, I think, you know, Daniel Bryan sort of rose to the occasion out of the blue. You know, he was given this role and it was like, you know, if you fucking nail this, you could get a WrestleMania main event out of it. He's like, okay. But he did.
And he did, yeah.
But with you know, I felt like Stephanie was really on fire in this segment. And I felt Bayley didn't really pull the weight as much as I would have liked. So I'm hoping that, like, she's going to get... I mean, I thought the match with Nia Jax was pretty decent, and I liked the finish of Bayley kind of getting that belly to belly from the top rope for the victory. I thought that was quite a good way to get her into the Rumble match with Charlotte. But here's the question I have for you. What do you think of the segment? And also, you know, there's talk from Dave Meltzer that they're going to do a similar story of, you know, Daniel Bryan WrestleMania 30 with Bayley this year becoming champion. Do you want to just see Bayley Charlotte at WrestleMania, or do you think there's a potential? Do you think there's any interest in having something with Bayley versus Stephanie as well?
I would love Bayley and Stephanie. I would. In all honesty, I think that's where the money ultimately lies. But I don't think that's a WrestleMania story. I think that's more of a SummerSlam story.
Yeah.
In all honesty, I kind of wish they would have scaled this back a bit and had all this transpire at Survivor Series and move on to the big payoff between Charlotte and Bayley at Royal Rumble and then move on to Stephanie and Bayley at WrestleMania. I think that's where the true money lies because no one likes Stephanie McMahon. No one does. We all want to see her get her ass kicked, and no one can touch her. So what do? You put in the improbable underdog and Bayley in a match against her. It writes itself. It's perfect. It's wonderful. It finally gives us the vindication of someone beating her ass. So I love it. I think that it's great. I think that that's where the money matches. But I agree with you. I think that Bayley needs to up her game because Stephanie usually brings her A game whenever she's trying. Whenever she's not trying to get cheered by the fans and booed the next minute by playing yo-yo with the fans' emotions. Fuck that. You're a good heel. Stick with it. As for Bayley, yeah, she needs to bring the intensity. That's the thing. I truly believe that Bayley has a ton of passion for wrestling. I really do. But she doesn't know how to show that she has a ton of passion for wrestling. And that can be taught. That's not one of those things where it's like, well, she just doesn't have it. No, you can teach her that, just like Daniel Bryan learned it. So it's absolutely plausible. It can happen. And I hope that it will happen.
Yeah, I'm the same as you. I think that's the money match down the line is Bayley and Stephanie, and hopefully she's able to grow with the promos and stuff. So I guess we'll see. Also on this show we had the last man standing match with Braun Strowman and Sami Zayn, and I thought this was excellent. I loved this match. I thought it was really creative. I enjoyed them going backstage and the different spots they did. I thought Sammy getting to, sort of get Braun Strowman falling through a table off the stage for that kind of near count was really dramatic and really exciting. And, we said from day one when this feud started, we knew the aim of this was to get Braun Strowman over, right? Like, we knew this was what it was about. And I think they told a pretty good story with this. And I think that it was effective, but I'm curious, how did you feel this went? How did you enjoy it? I mean, last man standing is not a stipulation that I'm a huge fan of, but I thought this was one of the better ones.
I was watching it with Val, and we're sitting there, and we look at each other, and we both make up our minds simultaneously, and we go, like, as the bell's ringing, we go, this is gonna go one of two ways. Like, there's not going to be any sitting on the fence with it. You are either going to love this or you're going to hate it. And every second counts in this type of stipulation. And I don't think it's open to interpretation. I think that this is either going to work or it's not going to work based on the decisions that they make in the creative of building the match. And about 5 minutes in, we're both indecisive, kind of sitting on our hands, kind of, squirming around uncomfortably, like, oh boy, what's going to happen here? And I'm thinking, God, they need to give Sammy some more offense. He's got the kendo sticks, and those were some brutal shots. But when I decided that this was a fantastic segment, Kenny? I decided when? The second they went through that curtain, and they went to the back, and I said, Yep, this is what I wanted out of a last man standing match, brawling in the back. And the thing about Sami Zayn losing this match, he gave so much offense to Braun Strowman, and he did not look weak in losing to Braun Strowman. He nearly beat Braun Strowman. He put him through those tables. It was just fantastic. He got thrown all around, and he still got back up from it. This was the perfect scenario where you build a match and you build two people and you make them both look good coming out of it. If Sammy had to lose, I felt that this was the type of match to where it would be best if he did lose, because he actually looked strong throughout the entirety of it. And I wish they would do more segments where they go backstage like that. I really miss it. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I thought they nailed it. They nailed it. And I don't know if there's this might be my favorite Last Man Standing match, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean,
I can't think of one that I prefer more.
I'll be honest. I enjoy the old Attitude Era Last Man Standing matches, right? Like I always think of The Rock and Mankind, right? Whenever Mankind pinned him under the under that.
The halftime heat thing.
Forklift.
Yeah, there you go.
I enjoyed that. I'm a fan of matches like this, and I thought this was one of the better ones. So yeah, no, it was great. I loved it. This was the highlight of Raw for me.
Yeah, 100%. It was great. The New Day, after a brief exchange with Jack Gallagher, came out with the I think probably for the last week with their festive clothes. And they had a segment with Titus O'Neil, where Titus O'Neil came out. He mimicked the New Day entrance. He, basically was trying to go over the Titus brand, and he called Xavier the weakest link of the New Day. They had a match, and Xavier won it. I thought this was pretty fun, actually. Like, for the most part, I don't want in any way to see a continuation of Titus O'Neil in the New Day whatsoever. But, like, as Titus O'Neil segments go, this was the most tolerable that I have found it in a long time.
Let me just say, by the way, that's another win for the New Day, because they managed to get a Titus O'Neil segment from being complete shit to, that was fine.
Fair play to the New Day. They did well in that. And I think Titus O'Neil also deserves props for his attempt at the New Day intro, like, because I thought he did really well.
I enjoyed the whole thing. I thought that it was good. A bunch of people were commenting. I think they thought that me and you would just despise this. And on paper, we should have. But I liked it. I liked it. I'll be the first.
It was short and inoffensive.
Yes, exactly. For what it was.
Sort of like my sex life. Short and inoffensive. Anyway.
Oh, Linda.
Whoa, easy, big fella. So before we get to the main event segment, obviously I don't really have the notes in front of me. Is there anything else in the show that you want to talk about before we get to the main event segment?
I thought that this was, like, essentially the best and most interesting parts of it. I can't believe we're saying that about a Titus O'Neil segment, but, you know, the cruiserweights had some okay matches, you know, nothing too strong.
One bit of a quiet week for them.
Yeah. And Roman Reigns and, Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens fought earlier in the night to decide who the loser would not be allowed to come out for the main event. So, worth noting there, Kevin Owens ended up losing via DQ whenever he hit Seth Rollins with the ring bell, which was just the dumbest thing. Like,
I actually did think the Roman Reigns Chris Jericho United States title match was, I thought, actually put together pretty well. I was very, very chuckled by the, you know, Jericho flinging the US title belt at Roman and then just, like, lying playing dead. You know, I kind of nod to Eddie Guerrero almost.
It was absolutely brilliant. It was a nod to his good friend Eddie, and I loved it. I popped so hard whenever he did it, because I knew it was coming, and I'm just like, oh, you're so brilliant trying to get DQ'd, because, of course, the stipulation being, if Roman got counted out or DQ'd, he would lose the title. And that was, that kind of hooked me. I thought that John Cone was going to call for the bell there, but he didn't, miraculously.
And Jericho jumps up to the Codebreaker, almost gets the pinfall, and Jericho, who had actually tried to take the turnbuckle pad off, that would cause his downfall. That would cause him to actually lose the match.
Completely predictably, by the way, because no one believes that Roman Reigns is going to lose anytime soon to anyone.
No, nobody does. But I thought the match was fun. You know, because the thing is, I'm basically at the end of my rope with the combinations of Kevin Owens, Seth Rollins, Chris Jericho, Roman Reigns. Like, I don't want to see those.
The only combination I want to see is Chris Jericho versus Kevin Owens in the main event of WrestleMania.
Well, yeah, I definitely want to see that at WrestleMania for sure. But I think that the Roman Jericho is probably the match that I've enjoyed the most of these combinations in quite a while. So.
Easily. These two have great chemistry together too, by the way. Anytime they're in there, I already know the outcome, because Roman Reigns matches are incredibly boring and predictable, but they do have excellent chemistry, more so than most opponents that either guy is in there with, actually, these days. So Whenever I heard that was going to be the main event, I was like, well, it's predictable, but at least it'll be an entertaining match. And it was.
And the main event segment of the show was the first ever edition of the Kevin Owens Show. Now, instead of having like a Jetatron 5000, Kevin Owens has a human man with a cardboard sign of the Kevin Owens Show on his face. It is the best thing of all time. And then,
so
like,
funny.
Jericho and Owens have this, like, you know, really plush table with really nice office chairs. And then for Goldberg, they have this child deck chair. Oh, God. It was so good.
Yeah, in the States, by the way, we call those a lawn chair.
A lawn chair.
So there you go. So if you're listening in the States, that's what it is, yeah.
And, you know, just to let you know, ladies and gentlemen, I want to bring a brief thing up here. You know, a couple of weeks ago, David said to cackle at the idea of a bum bag, right? Now, in the States, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, David, you call it a fanny pack.
That is correct.
I do love your
pronunciation there.
Now, if we were to take fanny pack and have that in the United Kingdom, that would be called a vagina pack. Which is why it is ludicrous. It's just as ludicrous as bum bag.
No doubt about it. Hey, I am not mincing words here, you guys. They are both they're both the same thing, though, right? Like bum bag.
They're both mentioning the bum, even though most people have them around the front.
Bum meaning ass, right? Fanny meaning ass here in the States, right? And mm-hmm. then a bag and a pack, you know, as something to where you would holster for your goods, to say. It's basically an asshole holster. That's going to be the next one that we.
I feel like you've patented the next best
yes,
thing.
Yes. In New Zealand, it's going to be an asshole holster. So, for all of my Kiwi listeners out there, get ready for an asshole holster. But no, they're equally ludicrous, but I had never heard the term bum bag, and I just thought it was the greatest thing.
There you go. So, anyway, we have Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho, and they're talking, and Chris Jericho enters himself into the Royal Rumble. You know, he's going to be in there, and he basically pitched it to Owens as, you know, if he wins, it means that the two best friends can face each other at WrestleMania and all that sort of stuff. And it was quite interesting because Kevin Owens was clearly quite agitated by this, you know, quite agitated at the idea that Chris Jericho could win the Royal Rumble and they might have to face each other. And Chris Jericho's like, well, you know, we would both still be co-champions, you know, no matter who wins. And I thought they played up the tension here quite nicely. It was nice and subtle. It wasn't like, you know, doing 5 weeks worth of story in one segment. It was a nice subtle nod. What did you make of this little slight piece of dissension?
I thought it was absolutely brilliant. This was just perfect. I am so tired of them spelling out every story and, as you said, telling 5 weeks worth of story in one segment. I'm so tired of that. Subtlety is absolutely key, right, to any type of storytelling. The more that you leave unknown, the more I want to know. The more you expose, the less engaged and interested I become. So I loved it. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. And, of course, they were interrupted by Goldberg's music.
Yeah, Goldberg comes out to the ring, and he's the guest in the Kevin Owens Show. And I think it kind of makes sense for Goldberg and Kevin Owens to be having some kind of interaction, because Goldberg's, after all, going to be in the Royal Rumble, and if he is victorious in that and goes on to WrestleMania, Kevin Owens could be the champion that he goes on to face. So I like the idea of having them. I also, quick shout out to Kevin Owens for his great line where he was about to introduce his guest, you know, who pioneered the Attitude Era and was known by his name being shouted, which of course was Chris Jericho. You know, not Bill Goldberg. We'll try and break this down into the different parts of what happened. What did you think of the interaction between Goldberg and Kevin Owens to begin with?
I thought it was it didn't necessarily hit all of the spots that I wanted it to, but I thought it was fine.
Do you think maybe part of the issue with it is that, like, you know, the key to Goldberg's success, I guess, so far has been the sort of intensity. And the fact that he's a killer, almost.
Right.
Whereas Kevin Owens, for the most part in the last few weeks, has been a bit comedy.
Yeah, Owens and Goldberg, their demeanors could not be any more different.
They're two very different
people, and I think putting them in the same talking point, the talking head segment, kind of a mistake.
I mean, I think they had to do it because, you know, it makes sense. But yeah, I think you're right. I think it maybe didn't. I mean, I did like that, you know, once Goldberg flung the chair away, Owens flung all the fur. And to be fair, look at Owens throwing that table. That's strength. Then we got an appearance from our good pal Roman Reigns, who, you know, he decided, I'll tell you what it was, a bit of an insider story. Roman Reigns had went to the back, and you know, sometimes like you're just like sick of carrying your backpacks, you just like throw it away somewhere for later on.
All the time you're just like, I'm throwing this in the garbage.
That's how Roman felt with the US title. Yeah, Roman didn't feel the need to bring the US title back out, because that doesn't mean anything, you know. The Intercontinental Championship main event SmackDown. The US title is Roman's, you know, shit stainer.
It's his own personal fuck puppet.
Yeah, what a great term for it. And we got this, you know, we got Roman Reigns coming out, and he briefly talks to Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho before moving on to Goldberg, and they kind of face off. And, you know, I can't remember if I said this on here or not, but like, a match that I would really like to see at some point is a heel Roman Reigns and Goldberg. I think it could be good. And then we got Braun Strowman, and he comes out. He's entered himself into the Royal Rumble, which is obviously the next step for him, given that he's, you know, beaten Sami Zayn and he's conquered that part of his path. So then we had Braun Strowman out there, and Jericho and Owens quickly decided to get out of Dodge, and Goldberg and Reigns double speared Braun Strowman. I really liked the line in commentary where I think it was Corey Graves had said, you know, Braun Strowman's such a monster, it took two spears, took two men to do a spear to get him down. Like, I thought that was quite clever. And then we end the show with kind of Goldberg standing tall. I thought they did a nice job here of really selling the Royal Rumble match, selling the fact that we've got three guys in there with the Jericho, Goldberg, and Braun, and then we've got the title match with Roman and Kevin Owens. A lot of nice possibilities that they set up here. What did you think of this? The way this segment all panned out with Goldberg, Roman, and Braun?
The thing too is, I enjoyed the whole thing. I thought that on a whole, once you get over the miscommunication and chemistry between Kevin Owens and Goldberg, it really picked up steam. I think once the furniture got thrown, it got a lot better. this is going to be interesting, and it's setting up the Rumble. There's a lot of different possibilities. I would love nothing more than for Chris Jericho to win the Rumble at this point. I think that that's the best option that they have, which is kind of sad if you really get into the semantics that a guy who was disappearing for a while and coming back and disappearing and coming back. He is their biggest star on Raw, no question about it. I thought the commentary team did a great job. Here's the thing, is we always shit on Raw. I think Raw has the best commentary team. I really love Corey Graves. He's just absolutely perfect. He understands and gets it. I'm really proud of him for getting over his injury that cost him his career and turning it into a new opportunity. He just absolutely knocks it out of the park. Byron Saxton, who I used to despise, just really coming into his own as the dumb nerd. I think that that's just a character that he plays so perfect. I enjoy the chemistry between those two. Michael Cole has always been best whenever he's just the straight man for other people to play off of.
I think Cole's done some of his best work in the last 6 months.
In terms of consistent
comment. Because Corey Graves and Byron Saxton, I think they really caught, you know, it's like you've got the kind of geeky nerd of Byron Saxton, the heel kind of almost like a young Jesse Ventura of Corey Graves,
and the
straight man of Michael Cole. I think it works really well, and especially when you've got that fucking orgy at the table on a Tuesday night. Jesus. Sausage fest at the announcement.
It's just so convoluted, you know, but the great thing too is with Byron and Corey playing off of each other, you got the, I don't think anyone would argue that Corey Graves is like the coolest guy in the room, right? Like, he, anytime you see him, you're just like, man, that is a handsome fucking guy who's got it all ready for him on the table. He dresses sharp, he acts sharp, he just acts cool, talks cool, just the whole nine yards. And Byron Saxton is the biggest wiener on the planet, right?
So and I like that him.
No, I love it about him. I love it about him because the fact that you have that dichotomy of the coolest guy in the room interacting with the nerdiest guy in the room. And it's just perfect. The fireworks fly, and Michael Cole even gets in on it and digs Byron Saxton a bit. And it's just perfect. I think that those three just maybe the best commentary team in wrestling today, in all honesty.
Yeah, no, I would say that's right. I think one other thing I liked about the main event segment was it opened up a lot of different match possibilities. Owens and Jericho, Goldberg and Owens, Reigns and Goldberg, Strowman and Goldberg, you know, all these different possibilities. And that's what used to happen in Royal Rumble season. And I think we kind of shied away from that, and I'm glad that's back. So I think for this week's show, I'm going to give it a 7.5 out of 10. I thought this was a good show. I thought that most of the stuff that was on it worked. And I thought they built some really good interest going out of the Royal Rumble. So overall, I enjoyed the show. I thought it was good.
I would give this show a 6 out of 10. I enjoyed the stuff that I liked. And I'm really tired of Roman Reigns. So I think that just the fact that he is the focal point of Monday Night Raw, despite not having the title, he never carries his title out. I tweeted the other day, I said, it's a lot like me and my work emails, right? That's Roman in his title. I never check them, but I never get in trouble for never checking them, so I'm just going to continue to not check them. And that's a lot like him with his title. He never brings it out, and he never gets in trouble for never bringing it out, so he's just going to continue to never bring it out.
Well, also, another reason that I think I'm more, you know, I'm a 1.5 higher than you, is the phenomenal appearance this week of Paul Heyman in the main event segment.
The best part about the Paul Heyman appearance is whenever Braun Strowman came out and he just absolutely cowered. He just goes, please don't hit me, sir. Please, sir. I beg you.
Yeah. And he pretends Brock Lesnar's going to be there. And yeah. Now, here's a question for you. Next week, we've got two people coming on Raw. Number one is Shawn Michaels. Do you think Shawn Michaels is just on the show next week to promote his WWE Studios film, The Resurrection of Gavin Stone? Or do you think that Shawn Michaels is going to be involved somehow at the Royal Rumble? What's your gut feeling on that one?
If Shawn Michaels is not wrestling AJ Styles at the Royal Rumble, then I don't want to see him at all.
Okay, and the other one, I think Shawn will be involved in the Royal Rumble, and I'm open to it. To be honest, I don't want him to wrestle AJ Styles at the Royal Rumble. I want John Cena and AJ Styles. That's the match I want now. I thought they're, you know, we'll get to on the SmackDown summary, but my God, that contract signing, that was so good.
Here's my thing about that is I know where it's leading, and I don't like where it's leading, so I'm not pumped about it.
I get that. I mean, for me, I'm just kind of enjoying the ride of it. I think Cena's actually been a lot better in this run so far, so I'm open to it. But speaking of where it might go, The Undertaker is going to be on Raw. I thought he was a SmackDown guy, but apparently he's going to be on Raw. Why do you think he's on Raw? What's the reason for the dead man on Raw next week? What do you think?
Well, considering he went on and on and on about how much he loves SmackDown and this and that about SmackDown, on SmackDown, and now he's appearing at Raw to just completely destroy his credibility, I guess. I mean, what little credibility he had left after he became Vince McMahon's personal bitch at WrestleMania last year. it's clearly a ratings ploy. SmackDown beat Raw in the ratings, and now Vince is having a conniption fit over his flagship brand being in second place to The Rock's catchphrase brand. So,
and also next week is the return of the football.
Oh yeah, the playoffs, yeah.
So they want the big guns. My hope is that if you know the one way that I would be really happy with it is if the Undertaker comes out and sort of defends SmackDown on Raw. That's what I want to see. I want to see him sort of cement.
Happen.
It won't happen. Listen, give me the week. to be optimistic. Give me a week before you shut me down on it.
What I want to know more than that is, what do you think will happen?
I think that he will. What I think they're good. Do you remember the in 2007 when The Undertaker won the Royal Rumble and he came out on Raw and did that segment with Bobby Lashley, John Cena, and Batista, where they were all the champions and he was going to choose which one he faced? Do you remember that?
I didn't watch then, so no.
Okay, basically he won the Royal Rumble and it was like he can choose which champion he wants to go after, and he kind of came out and all three of them were in the ring. So I think what he's going to do is he's going to announce his entry into the Royal Rumble match. That's what I think it is. And I hope he is in it, because the thing about the Royal Rumble this year is, you know, there are three or four pretty obvious things, but like I don't have a clue who's going to win the Royal Rumble. There's three or four people it could be, potentially more, and I like not knowing, you know? I like not knowing where things are going exactly. I think the brand split creates a little bit more of an uncertainty in that regard, which I like. So I hope Undertaker's in the Royal Rumble. I think it'd be good to see him in there, add some much-needed star power to that 60,000-seater dome, you know? And seeing The Undertaker in the Rumble gives us a chance to see him in the ring with a lot of people we might not see him in the ring with. Any other point? So I'm cautiously optimistic about it, and also I really wanted to prove Sandra wrong. So that's my hope as that happens. So let's, before we kind of go, let's talk about Bring It to the Table, the new WWE Network show with the Hot 97 DJ Pete Rosenberg paneling the show with Paul Heyman and JBL, kind of covering hot topics like Hulk Hogan when he came back to WWE. You know, Raw being 3 hours, Bret Hart being angry at people, all these different topics. A lot of people are talking about it. What did you think of the show, the format, and the presentation?
I like Rosenberg. I thought that he did a stellar job. He held his own against two very larger-than-life personalities, JBL and Paul Heyman. The whole shoot aspect of it, I don't know if that works on a network where everything is controlled and micromanaged. And, you know, I mean, we're talking about a publicly traded company that doesn't want anything bad being said about their product. They're, you know, if you're expecting JBL or Paul Heyman to come out and agree with some of the things that Rosenberg was speaking on, I think that you're going to be waiting and wishing and hoping for a long time, because I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to be an entirely kiss-ass product from the terms, you know, but I think instantly belittling some very valid things, you know, it's kind of funny because they touched on the three-hour format of Raw, and JBL breaks down the financial numbers, and then Paul Heyman, friend of the show, very vehemently defends the three-hour format as being better.
Can I just interrupt it? I need to interrupt, because Paul Heyman has clarified this on Twitter. He at no point said it was better. He said that it's not going to change due to the financials, which, you know, cleverly is a different statement, you know? Like, he said it's not going to change. Because I think we all know that if we were behind closed doors, Paul Heyman would not think that the three-hour format is better. But he kind of, he'd come out on Twitter responding to someone to say this. I wanted to get that in there as something he had said on social media.
Absolutely. But I mean, like today, Eric Bischoff is tweeting that from a fan perspective, you always want the fan to be left wanting more, not sitting there fast-forwarding and kind of trudging through something. And so, I mean, if Eric Bischoff, who, by and large, very successful TV executive, understands this, then I think that the common fan also gets it.
It's funny. I mean, if I take myself as an example, like, I don't watch Raw live anymore.
Right.
And it's not because I don't enjoy the show. I actually do enjoy Raw as a TV show. You know, I wouldn't be covering it every week if I didn't, you know. Like, we complain about aspects of it, but I don't think it's a terrible TV show. I think it's too long, but I don't think it's terrible. So, but for me, what I like to do is I like to record it and watch it on Tuesday morning with the ability to skip through the adverts and the ability to, you know, go through different things rather than just having to wait through. Because, you know, the thing that we've got in the UK is, like, we need to sit between 1 and 4am and watch all these adverts. It is excruciating to get through. But in
I would fall asleep.
Oh, I mean, I have. I have in the past. I've also fallen asleep live in the past when I was supposed to be live tweeting for what culture, but we won't go into that. But in contrast to that, I voluntarily stay up and watch SmackDown Live because I love the show. And I love the it never feels like it drags for me. And I think the timing is partly to do with that. So, for me, as you said something earlier on about Mick Foley, and it kind of... I watched Bring It to the Table and I liked it. I thought it was a good show. I agree with you. I thought Pete Rosenberg was really good. I thought Paul Heyman was really good. I don't really understand why... I don't really understand why JBL was sort of like... He was belittling a lot of the stuff that Rosenberg was saying, and then he... after a while, he was belittling a lot of stuff that Rosenberg said, and then... But then he was, "I'm only having fun with you." And I'm like, well, if we're going to do this show, either debate the stuff or don't. You know, let the guy speak. And you said about Mick Foley towards the beginning of the podcast, you can't be half pregnant. And I feel that's the danger with this show, is being half pregnant. You know, don't try and cover edgy subjects if you don't really want to cover them, you know?
Yes, yes. Absolutely. That's an excellent point. And also a nice way to bookend this episode of the Raw Rundown, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's all for us. David, where can people find you on Twitter?
They can find me on Twitter at Zoopsoul. That's ZOOPSOUL. Kenny, I already know I'm great. It's 2017. I am a new me. I'm looking in the mirror every day, losing a little bit more weight, looking trim, looking gorgeous, looking sleek in my wonderful pea coat. Right? Just looking great. I would fuck the shit out of me. I already know I'm great. But Kenny, I just want you to know, in 2017, I also think you're great.
You're so full of shit. For fuck's sake. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for
being... I tried to give him a wonderful compliment, you guys. You just heard it. I was so sincere there. I really, truly do think that Kenny
is
great.
Do you know what it is, though? It's not. What you do is you lace it up in a big bowl of bullshit.
A big bowl of sincere compliments for you, Kenny McIntosh.
Well, I appreciate your...
Kenny goes on about wrestling so often, right? He goes here and there. He sets up these wonderful tours that make people happy, give people lifelong memories that they'll remember on their fucking deathbeds, right? He goes and he creates wonderful content, both for Inside the Ropes and What Culture. He puts in more hours into the wrestling business. He eats, drinks, sleeps, fucks, you name it, the wrestling business, right? Right? And he does all of this. Why? Not for the money. To create some wonderful content to make people forget about their problems for a day. Right? That's Kenny McIntosh in a nutshell. And here I am, praising him like so. And he just goes, "Oh no, you're full of shit, fuck you."
I don't take compliments well, but I appreciate everything that you said. Thank you very much. You're
I don't
friend.
Mean it now. No.
Much better.
I
it's much
it
easier to take
now.
It when you think you don't mean
Sandra.
It. Yeah, good. Made it all up. So from that, yeah, sign up to us on Patreon. We've got Sandra and I have just covered the first episode of Shotgun Saturday Night from 1997, which is an absolute shit show. It's tremendous. We've got the Flying Nuns. We've got Todd Pettengill and Sonny doing the Macarena with a midget. It is an incredible show. Some people have asked us, you know, if we're going to listen to that podcast, how can we watch Shotgun Saturday Night because it's not on the network? It is not on the network, and it is absolutely not on Daily Motion. So you should absolutely not go to Google and type in Shotgun Saturday Night, January the 4th, 1997, and click on the Daily Motion link to watch the full episode. Do not do that. That is not how
absolutely
you watch it.
Absolutely don't do
You will
that.
Need to find another way.
Yeah, just very, very, very bad thing. Never do that. Never Google that specific show and then watch it. That's terrible.
No, don't do that. I'll be back with Sandra hopefully tomorrow with the SmackDown summary. What an absolutely barn burner episode of SmackDown. Excellent stuff. Please check it out if you haven't. And David and I will be back next week with the Raw Rundown, and I hope that you've all had a nice beginning to 2017. I hope that things are all going well for you, and let's hope that we can get through this year without as much carnage to the world.
I'll say this, the first celebrity death of 2017 might be Charles Manson, so I'm okay with this.
Great, yeah, fuck that guy. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you soon. Do something nice for somebody.
Do something nice for somebody that you don't even know, and maybe somebody that you don't even know will do something nice for you. Take care, everybody.
And the last thing is, very quickly, the thing is, see, when you start doing stuff like podcasts like we do, you have to be a bit nicer to people than you want to be sometimes. So you know those people on Twitter that annoy you, or like the friends on Facebook that you really want to delete? Just delete them. Block them. Do the stuff that we wish that we could do that we can't. And if you think we're talking about you, of course we're not. Not at all. We love you. Thanks for listening. Bye, everyone.